Songs by Ono no Komachi. A high-end period story by Star Lady. Read by Cloud Lake. Rating: general audiences. Fandoms: Kokin Wakashu, Kokinshu, High-end Jidai, or High-end Period. Characters: Ono no Komachi and Ki no Tsurayuki. Additional tags: poetry, age difference, chromatic yuletide, source, character, and source creator. Summary: one person's autumn is another's spring. Two poets and a singular friendship. For Inhammer. The word from the daylight side of the court is that the sovereign has begun declaring that he would like to commission an anthology of poetry, collecting the best of the songs that have been composed in our realm, past and present. Of course, the fact of the matter is that the nighttime side of the court has been growing too unruly, and an anthology of songs will be just the thing to balance out night and day, the sovereign, and the clans. Whether the imperial intention ever comes to pass is one thing, but every poet in the capital has been raiding their personal collections all the same, trying to put their best hand forward. To have one's songs included in an imperial collection, one's fame would last at least 10,000 years. My source for all of this gossip was unusually reliable, since I heard it from young Ki no Tsurayuki himself. The story of how Tsurayuki came to be, unsurprisingly, with the depth of snow in my hair before I took my vows and cut it off, my principal caller for the past few years, is charmingly direct. He has a great talent for waka, and those around him told him so from the time he was a child, being something of a prodigy. Most of the men who were truly skilled at song in my generation have now passed on and retired from the world, and so one day, in a spring a few years ago, I was delivered a poem on a strip of mulberry paper wrapped around a branch of just-opening plum flowers, asking to be received politely. Tsurayuki was a very young man then, just having donned trousers, and I will not do him the disservice of repeating his effort at the time here. But the contrast between the paper and plum was charming, and the handwriting was appropriately coordinated with the song itself, energetic but not undignified. There is not much to do in my days, even for an elderly lady like me whom propriety has little claim. And in any case, I have the reputation of my children to consider. I invited Tsurayuki in, and no sooner had we traded pleasantries than he started off by insulting my poetry. Needless to say, I liked him immediately. Over the years, our intimacy has deepened to the point where I set only one very thin screen between us. Years and years ago, when I had just entered service beyond the clouds, we were not so careful about seeing and being seen. But these days, it is all women think about. I even participated in public poetry contests when I was a very young woman. But no longer. I have tried to explain to Tsurayuki how things used to be, and that he should bear these things in mind when criticizing my poems in particular. But he will have none of it. Or rather, he insists that such things do not matter now. It is not in my nature, however, to accept such declarations. And so today, when he suggested that I collect some of my poems for posterity to remember, I promptly gave him my copy of one of my oldest. When we cannot meet, because there is no moonlight, I wake up, blaze up, with longing, my breast pounding. Sparks fly, my troubled heart chars. Tsurayuki read it aloud, as is only proper, and the screen was thin enough and the daylight bright enough that I could read his expression clearly. I laughed. My laughter is another thing about me that is old-fashioned, forthright, and uncompromising. Not to your taste, my friend. I teased, and I could practically hear him searching for something tactful to say. It's not that, he protested after a moment. It's marvelous, truly, but it's so unrestrained. I laughed again. Surely you've heard that I had many admirers in my youth, Tsurayuki. He was silent for a long time. I could have never written this, he said at last in a low voice. The man for whom you felt these things, he must have been exceptional to inspire such feelings. I could have said many things. I could have asked Tsurayuki whether he had ever felt such passion for anything but poetry. But I had no wish to embarrass him further. Instead, I picked up another poem and recited it. Even more painful than burning one's body with flaring coals is the separation between the capital and those islands. And what do you make of this one? I asked when I had finished. Was it the same man who went out to Miyakojima? He asked, smiling. Or another? I told him lightly and pulled out another sheet of paper from the stack. Those times when I long for you so very keenly, I wear through the night, dark as leopard lily seeds, my sleeping robes inside out. That one is at least not unbalanced, he said when I had finished. It's a game, Tsurayuki, I explained patiently. A form, something that's expected. Do you think everyone constantly feels every emotion they put into song as strongly as it sounds? Sometimes my friend the young poet master seems very young to me. So when you propositioned Henjo at Iso no Kami Temple, he said tentatively, and I recited from memory. When I spend the night on the top of a high crag, it is very cold. Won't you do me the favor of lending me a moss robe? Tsurayuki himself recited Henjo's reply. The moss robe of one forsaken by the world has only one layer. Yet, not loaning it would be harsh. So come, let's sleep together. He is the only man to have ever gotten the better of me, I said ruefully when he had finished. Of course, I knew he would decline, Tsurayuki. The surprise was how overt his reply was. I wasn't surprised at all that the story was all over the capital, even many years later, that a monk should come out with so open an innuendo, and in reply to me, no less, practically guaranteed the exchange's notoriety. I am sure it was only his vows that kept him from sending a reply in the affirmative, Tsurayuki told me in odd note in his voice. Everyone says that your beauty was matched only by your skill with songs in your day. Perhaps, I allowed, though it was true enough. But my day was long ago. My skill at least remained to me, and though I have had little enough call to use it these past few years, except with Tsurayuki. I wish I could have seen for myself, he murmured. And in the sudden silence I could hear in the garden of the house a cuckoo calling. That is a moonlight sentiment, Tsurayuki, I murmured, covering my surprise, and remembered one of my older efforts. But he doesn't know that there is no seeing me through the seaweed amidst the shallows of my sorrows, this fisherman who comes here ceaselessly on weary legs. The cuckoo called again. Komachi? Tsurayuki said anxiously. Forgive me. I only meant... You meant that had fate been otherwise, we would have brought this affair to a natural conclusion long ago, I told him. Tsurayuki, I would have willingly assented. Though, I remarked archly, not before teasing you mercilessly about so blatant a proposition. Well, he said, gaining some of his self-possession, had I truly meant to make it, I would have put it in verse. Komachi, you know what I say about your poetry is not meant to be a criticism of you. And your poetry is marvelous. It is only that. Of course I know, I told him, surprised that he had felt the need to put it into words. Do you think I have been blind to the ways the world has changed? It is true that in my day we had only just invented the syllabary. But we were not children. No, that is not what I meant. Your poetry is necessary too, and glorious just as it is. But finding the fitting weight to counterbalance it, now that would be a challenge. I am confident that you will be up to it, I told him, and saw his twitch of surprise. Oh, come now, Tsurayuki. We both know that you have a very good chance of being asked to work on this anthology, should it ever come to pass. False modesty does not become you. I felt no need to tell him that I have felt increasingly frail these past few months. One more illness of any gravity would probably be enough to finish me off. It is the way of things. I have made a complete, fair copy of my poems to be presented to Tsuruyuki, and I have lived long enough missing my husband to welcome the idea of peace, or at least a temporary respite from the cares of this world. My life has not been the same without his presence in my house. Nor you, Komachi, he retorted, and we moved on to other topics. I thought that by the time he left a few hours later, just as the sun was setting, we had both put that uncomfortable interlude behind us. But Tsuruyuki again surprised me. After he made his goodbyes, he chanted a poem I knew well. Guided by the flames of a love without limits, I shall come at night, for at least no one censures traveling the path of dreams. It was my own, of course. I had something of a reputation for being fixated on dreams. When I served at court, and it is true that I had a great many of them, not at all pleasurable, there is nothing quite like the torment of dreaming something that you desire, that is not true but could be, and then awakening to see that your vision was false. I was struck to the core. There was no reply to be made to such a declaration, which could only be taken as sincere outside the confines of parchment and ink. And yet I owed him a reply, and nothing less than a truth. Luckily, I had long ago composed a suitable answer in a different context. Though I constantly travel on the path of dreams, feet never resting, all the visions are nothing to a glimpse in the waking world. I would never forget our friendship, Tsuruyuki, I told him, and after a moment I slipped my hand outside the screen. He took it immediately, old and wrinkled as it was, and clasped it tightly. Nor I, Komachi, he told me quietly, squeezing my fingers again before he let go. No matter what else might have been in another life. I am irrepressible, after all. In the morning, I sent him a poem by messenger, heedless of convention. I should have composed a new one, but I thought he would appreciate one of my previous works. Autumn nights are such only by repute, I see. We say that we'll meet, but there is no time at all before dawn has come. Alas. His reply came wrapped around a spray of chrysanthemums, with a jar of chrysanthemum wine. Chrysanthemums in autumn, as long as they're fragrant, I shall wear them in my cap, for my body may decay before the flowers. Leave it to Tsuruyuki to make a flirtation and a flattery out of unpleasant truths. I laughed and toasted his health over the wine that evening. Author's notes. All the poems in this fic are by Ono no Komachi herself, with the exception of the last one, which is actually by Ki no Tsuruyuki. I've relied on Larry's own translations for all but the last one, which is based on the 2001 Waka rendering, and I modified the translations from online-based text and a few of the translations at my own discretion. Most of the underpinnings of this fic are by way of Thomas Lamar's Uncovering Heian Japan. In my mind, this fic takes place sometime in the mid-890s. The sovereign in question is Uda, though the Kokin Wakashu, of which Ki no Tsuruyuki was the lead editor, was actually commanded by his son Daigo in 905 or thereabouts. It is not impossible that Komachi, who was active about the 850s, lived to see Uda's reign. She was definitely exchanging flirtatious poems with people in the early 870s. In my mind, she's in her 60s here, with Tsuruyuki in his early 20s. The vows in question are Buddhist, though are not full vows, and as such not terribly restrictive. The rough equivalent would be novice or postulant, though upper-class women who took vows in this period almost invariably remained in their own residences, whether they took full vows or not. All the medieval legends say that Komachi was crossed in love, beautiful, and hard-hearted. I enjoy the idea of her being the opposite, and not exactly as unhappy as implied by her poems, which may or may not be as autobiographical as we tend to read them. Many thanks to Winter Creek for the beta. Reader's notes. The author provided the poems written in Romaji, the Japanese words written out in English letters. I tried to read them since I had a little bit of Japanese, but it sounded woefully lacking. So I chose to leave them out. The listener can already assume the characters are speaking in Japanese, so adding the Japanese in would have been kind of halting to the story. I hope you agree with my decision for leaving out an attempted reading of the original language of the poems. If you have any thoughts on the story, on my particular reading of it, I'd love to hear them. Thank you so much for listening. Mata ne!